NFM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. Brazil, the gateway to the Amazon. We're at COP30, the UN Climate Summit. This is Democracy Now!
We've seen that with the presidency initiative, we now have a text about phasing out fossil fuel to develop a roadmap. It is very positive development, but we have to still be very careful because the level of ambition is not sufficient. We can have something that is partial or...
Delegates and leaders from more than 190 countries continue negotiations, and Brazilian President Lula is here in Belém. Pressure is mounting to include a roadmap to phase out oil, coal, and gas in the final climate text. We'll get response from Colombia's former environment minister, Susana Mohamed, Jean Su, co-author of a report, Data Crunch, How the AI Boom Threatens to Entrench Fossil Fuels and Compromise Climate Goals, and Sudanese climate activist Lina Yassin.
Whether Sudan, Senegal are doing well, what are the gaps, what are the challenges? But indicators don't rebuild our washed away villages. Then they don't fix our failed harvest.
After months of stonewalling, Congress finally votes almost unanimously to force the Justice Department to release the files on the convicted sex offender, Jeffrey Epstein. Many of his survivors were in the House gallery to watch. We'll play some of their voices.
It's an honor to stand here again for something America is finally united on, the immediate release of the entire Epstein files. In a divided nation, this is one demand we all share.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We're broadcasting from the gateway to the Amazon, from Belém, Brazil, at COP30. First headlines. Congress overwhelmingly passed legislation Tuesday to compel the Justice Department to release all files related to the late convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. In the House, the vote was near unanimous at 427-1, with Republican Congressman Clay Higgins of Louisiana being the only Congress member to vote no. Just hours later, the Senate unanimously passed the House bill. President Trump had opposed the bill for months, but dramatically reversed course over the weekend when he encouraged Republicans to support the measure. He's vowed to sign the bill into law. Epstein and Trump were once close friends. On Monday, Epstein's brother Mark told News Nation, quote, "Jeffrey definitely had dirt on Trump," unquote. Several Epstein survivors sitting in the House gallery cheered and embraced one another as the final vote tally was read. We'll hear from the survivors who spoke ahead of the House vote after headlines. While hosting Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman at the White House yesterday, President Trump called for ABC's broadcast license to be revoked. After ABC News White House correspondent Mary Bruce asked him why he had not released the Epstein files.
Mr. President, why wait for Congress to release the Epstein files? Why not just do it now?
You know, it's not the question that I mind. It's your attitude. I think you are a terrible reporter. It's the way you ask these questions. I think the license should be taken away from ABC because your news is so fake and it's so wrong. And we have a great commissioner, the chairman, who should look at that, because I think when you come in and when you're 97% negative to Trump and then Trump wins the election in a landslide, that means obviously your news is not credible and you're not credible as a reporter.
President Trump also defended Prince Mohammed bin Salman, When Bruce asked about the Saudi Crown Prince's involvement in the 2018 murder of Washington Post opinion columnist Jamal Khashoggi.
As far as this gentleman is concerned, he's done a phenomenal job. You're mentioning somebody that was extremely controversial. A lot of people didn't like that gentleman that you're talking about. Whether you like him or didn't like him, things happen. But he knew nothing about it. And we can leave it at that. You don't have to embarrass our guest by asking a question like that.
It's hopeless. Trump's comments contradict a U.S. intelligence report, which found Prince Mohammed bin Salman ordered Khashoggi's killing. Back in 2018, Khashoggi was lured into the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, where a 15-person team led by a close associate of MBS drugged, murdered, and dismembered Khashoggi with a bone saw. Following the press conference, Robert Weissman, co-president of Public Citizen, issued a statement saying, quote, Trump's shameful and disgusting comments about the assassination of Jamal Khashoggi cannot be separated from Trump's personal business interests with the Saudi regime. Trump and his family are receiving at a minimum tens of millions of annually from branding deals with Saudi Arabia, payments for doing nothing more than permitting their name to be attached to Saudi projects, unquote. On Tuesday night, Trump held a black tie dinner for Prince Mohammed bin Salman at the White House. Dozens of CEOs attended, including Elon Musk, Amazon's Jeff Bezos, and Apple CEO Tim Cook. Hamas and other factions inside Gaza are rejecting the U.S.-backed UN plan to place Gaza under the control of a U.S.-led board and an international stabilization force. In a statement, the Palestinian groups liken the plan to a, quote, deep international partnership in the war of extermination waged by the Israeli occupation against our people, unquote. This is Hamas spokesperson Hazem Qassem.
This resolution fully adopts the Israeli position and completely ignores the Palestinian position and the interests of our Palestinian people here in the Gaza Strip. Netanyahu does not want to continue with the ceasefire agreement, but rather wants to impose his vision on the Gaza Strip and the entire region.
This comes as Israel continues to carry out airstrikes in Gaza. Officials in Gaza say Israel's killed 279 Palestinians since the ceasefire came into effect in October. In Lebanon, Israel launched an airstrike on a Palestinian refugee camp, Ain el-Hilwa, killing 13 people and wounding several others. Another Israeli attack targeted a vehicle in southern Lebanon, killing one person. Established in 1948, Ain el-Hilwa is the largest of 12 Palestinian refugee camps and is home to at least 64,000 people. Tuesday's attack is the latest violation of Israel's ceasefire with Hezbollah, which went into effect a year ago. According to the UN, Israel's been targeting Hezbollah in near daily attacks since the ceasefire, resulting in at least 100 civilian deaths. Local media outlets in Somalia are reporting 12 Somali civilians, including 8 children, were killed Sunday in a suspected U.S. airstrike. So far this year, the U.S. is believed to have carried out nearly 100 strikes in Somalia targeting the group al-Shabaab. President Trump's voiced support for U.S. attacks inside Mexico and Colombia. This comes as Trump is refusing to rule out sending in ground troops to Venezuela. The New York Times reports Trump has also signed off on CIA plans for covert measures inside Venezuela, possibly to prepare the battlefield for a wider war. However, Trump has also reportedly reopened back-channel communications with the government of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. The U.S. has recently amassed over 15,000 troops in the region and bombed over 20 boats in the Caribbean and the Eastern Pacific. The U.S. has claimed the boats were carrying drugs, but no proof has been offered. On Tuesday, Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum responded to Trump's threats.
Lo hemos dicho con el Departamento de Estado.
We've said this with the State Department, with Marco Rubio, and they have understood. So much so that the understanding we have with them is one of collaboration and coordination. And the first points make very clear the respect for sovereignty, respect for our territoriality, and that there is collaboration and coordination without subordination.
Hundreds of protesters rallied in Raleigh, North Carolina Tuesday to protest new federal immigration raids in the city. This comes as federal agents continue to target Charlotte, where agents have arrested more than 200 immigrants since this weekend. The Department of Homeland Security has also announced plans to send 250 federal border agents to conduct immigration sweeps in Louisiana and Mississippi. A federal court ruled that Texas cannot use its recently passed congressional map for the 2026 midterm elections and will instead have to rely on a previous map from 2021. Texas Republican state legislators over the summer pushed for a new congressional map that could garner the GOP 5 additional House seats. In his ruling striking down the new congressional map, Trump-appointed judge Jeffrey Brown wrote, quote, "The public perception of this case is that it's about politics. To be sure, politics played a role in drawing the 2025 map, but it was much more than just politics. Substantial evidence shows Texas racially gerrymandered the 2025 map," unquote. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton vowed to ask the U.S. Supreme Court to reverse the ruling. Texas Republican Governor Greg Abbott declared Tuesday the Council on American Islamic Relations, known as CARE, the country's largest Muslim civil rights group, a foreign terrorist organization. In a statement, Texas Governor Abbott said CARE's goal is, quote, "to forcibly impose Sharia law and establish Islam's mastership of the world," unquote. Abbott also designated the Muslim Brotherhood as a foreign organization and prohibited both groups from acquiring property in the U.S. Robert McCall, CARE's director of government affairs, responded to Abbott in a letter saying, quote, "You do not have the authority to unilaterally declare any Americans or American institutions terrorist groups, nor is there any basis to level the smear against our organization," unquote. The Trump administration's taken more steps to dismantle the Department of Education by shifting several key programs to other federal agencies. In one move, the Office of Elementary and Secondary Education will be transferred to the Labor Department. Becky Pringle, the president of the National Education Association, criticized the move, saying, quote, "Donald Trump and his administration chose American Education Week, a time when our nation's celebrating students, public schools, and educators, to announce their illegal plan to further abandon students by dismantling the Department of Education," unquote. A federal judge has ruled in favor of Meta and against the Federal Trade Commission in an antitrust suit that claimed the social media giant is trying to establish a monopoly by buying up Instagram and WhatsApp. In his ruling, District Judge James Boasberg wrote, quote, "The landscape that existed only 5 years ago when the FTC brought this antitrust suit has changed markedly. While it once might have made sense to partition apps into separate markets of social networking and social media, that wall has since broken down," unquote. Earlier this year, President Trump called for the impeachment of Judge Boasberg after he ruled against Trump's ability to invoke wartime powers to deport migrants. Brazil's Supreme Court has sentenced high-ranking military officials and a federal police officer to 24 years in prison after finding them guilty for the assassination attempt against President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. It allows a similar ruling back in September. It follows a similar ruling back in September against former President Jair Bolsonaro, who was sentenced to 27 years and 3 months in prison for a coup attempt against President Lula. Earlier this month, Brazil's Supreme Court unanimously rejected Bolsonaro's appeal, challenging his prison sentence. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. After months of stonewalling by House Speaker Mike Johnson, Congress finally voted Tuesday to compel the Justice Department to release the files on Jeffrey Epstein, the deceased convicted sex offender and power broker. The House vote was unanimous, except for one. That's 427-1 in favor of releasing the files. Republican Congressman Clay Higgins of Louisiana was the lone no vote. Several survivors of Epstein's abuse were seated in the gallery during the vote and embraced, cheering when it passed. The Senate then voted unanimously to pass the House bill. It's a stunning outcome after months of fierce opposition by President Trump and Republican Party. Trump reversed course over the weekend when he saw too many defections and said he would sign the bill. Ahead of the vote, survivors of Jeffrey Epstein's abuse held a news conference on Capitol Hill. These are some of their voices.
My name is Lisa Phillips. It's an honor to stand here again for something America is finally united on. The immediate release of the entire Epstein files. In a divided nation, this is one demand we all share. So today, we are launching something historic. The first national survivor-led political movement in America. Nonpartisan, laser-focused on exposing the systems, the loopholes, power structures, and silencing mechanisms that have protected predators for far too long. We are stepping directly into the halls of power, into the political arena. We will help rewrite laws that failed us and build protections for our nation's children together, targeted by sexual exploitation. Together, today, survivors begin our own fight. The Survivor Revolution. And we intend to change this nation for the better.
Hello, everybody. I am Jonalisa Jones. This was me at 14 years old. I was a child. I was in ninth grade. I was hopeful for life and what the future had held for me. He stole a lot from me. Bye. At 14. Sexual abuse is not a Republican issue. It is not a Democratic issue. It is also not a hoax. We are here as American survivors of a man who used his wealth and power to hurt young girls and women. The world should see the files to know who Jeffrey Epstein was and how the system catered to him and failed us. Emotionally, this process has been distressing. First, the administration said it would release everything and then applauded President Trump for that. Then it fought to release nothing.
Good morning. My name is Annie Farmer, and this is a photo of me and my sister Maria Farmer around the time I was 16 and she was 25. That's how old we were when we were abused by Epstein and Maxwell. This is not an issue of a few corrupt Democrats or a few corrupt Republicans. This is a case of institutional betrayal. Yeah. Because these crimes were not properly investigated, so many more girls and women were harmed. My sister, because of her bravery, was repeatedly threatened and lived in fear with dire consequences for her health and her career. 30 years later, even as oceans of allegations and obvious truths have emerged, the government has still not chosen transparency. This is why we have all come together as one united voice to demand the release of all the Epstein files and to finally bring the truth out of the shadows.
Annie Farmer's sister, Mary Farmer, first reported Jeffrey Epstein's abuse to the FBI in 1996, nearly 30 years ago. The survivors of Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell's abuse were speaking at a Capitol Hill news conference ahead of the House and Senate votes to force the DOJ to release the Epstein files. Unanimous in the Senate, only one dissenting vote in the House. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. We're broadcasting from the UN Climate Summit, that's COP30, from the Brazilian city of Belém, the gateway to the Amazon. I'm Amy Goodman. As delegates and leaders representing more than 190 countries continue negotiations, the Brazilian presidency is expected to release a new draft text today addressing some of the most pressing climate demands, including financing and the transition away from fossil fuels. Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva is in Belém today as pressures mounting to include roadmap to phase out oil, coal, and gas and the final climate text. He may pass us at any moment. More than 80 countries from Africa, Latin America, Asia, and the Pacific, as well as European Union member states and the United Kingdom, have joined those calls, with Colombia leading the efforts. This all comes as frustration is mounting over the refusal by wealthier nations and some of the world's worst polluters to properly fund climate adaptation efforts for global South countries most impacted by the climate crisis, but those that did not cause it. We're now joined by Susana Mohamed, longtime environmentalist. She served as Colombia's Minister of Environment and Sustainable Development from 2022 to this year. She was also the president of last year's United Nations Biodiversity Conference held in Cali, Colombia. She is of Palestinian descent. We welcome you back to Democracy Now!, Susana. We have spoken to you at past COPs. You were the main climate negotiator at 1.4 Colombia. If you can initiate this global audience into what COP means, even that, the Conference of Parties, 30 years, why this is so important and what's happening today with the Brazilian president here and what you're seeing in the texts that have been presented.
Thank you so much, Amy, and I'm so glad to be here again this year. Well, it's very important to let the audience understand what this environment means. COP is the conference of the parties. Who are the parties? And the parties to what? The parties are the countries of the world that have subscribed the Convention on Climate Change. And this convention is an international treaty signed by the countries to be able to control and stabilize the climate. Because we knew since 30 years ago, and that's why it's called COP30, because it's the 30th time that the parties meet to try to solve this issue. But what's the reality? You have faced it in the United States during these years, that things are getting out of control, the climate and the emissions, the CO2 emissions that produce this climate crisis are increasing, not decreasing. And also that the climate is becoming more wild, if we can say it in simple words, and more dangerous, the situation. So this 2025 COP is critical because scientists said that we needed to cut emissions by 42% compared to 2019 in 2030. But the reality is that we are in a trajectory rather than to decrease 42%, to increase 16%. And rather than to stabilize the climate in 1.5, we are actually going to a trajectory to have an increase in temperature of 2.8 Celsius. And just to give your audience a dimension of what that means, we have never experienced in the last two geological eras this temperature. Humanity, since it's a species alive on planet Earth, has never experienced this temperature. We have no clue, no idea what this means. And when we could see that happening at the end of this century, and who will believe in this? The children that were already born in this century. So that's why this conference is the only fora that we have internationally, globally, so countries agree and take action.
I'm going to ask you about what Kumi Naidu yesterday, the South African climate activist, called the F word, fossil fuels. Now, what would it mean to include the phase out of fossil fuels in the final climate text? And how is it possible that that hasn't happened before?
Well, it happened for the first time in Dubai, which was actually a very interesting process because it was in the Arab world, in the United Arab Emirates. And you know that the largest reserves of oil in the world are there, and the cheapest ones. So it was a big effort that we could include that an objective is to phase out fossil fuels, which actually was not even that language. It was transition away from fossil fuels, because it's a transition. But what does that mean? That we should change our source of energy. We should stop producing, extending the frontier of production, and and also stop the consumption and burning of fossil fuels, and that is a whole change. So now what happens is that it has been 2 years since Dubai, and the Brazilian government actually gave licenses for exploration in the Amazon Delta, outside in deep waters where the Amazon River comes, just weeks before this conference. It's a very contradictory message, because you know the Amazon is one of the pillars of climate stability. The Amazon absorbs so much CO2, and what happens when we create deforestation is that every hectare deforested emits CO2 and stops absorbing. So if we lose the Amazon, which means deforestation of around 25%, we actually lose the control of the climate. And we are in the Amazon. This COP is in the Amazon in 2025, 5 years before we need to reach the goal to stabilize the climate. And the Brazilian government gives licenses for exploration of oil a few weeks before. So the elephant in the room is the fossil fuels. The Arab countries don't want to speak about it. Actually, they're trying to bring back the decision of Dubai and say, oh, we don't feel that that's correct, which was a big effort. But the good news is that yesterday, a coalition of 80 countries stood up and said, we have to develop a pathway for the transition. We cannot leave this COP. So the elephant in the room has become now the main issue. And it has light and is now in negotiated text. And now President Lula is coming today, and Brazil is now committed that the roadmap advances. But I give you a sober fact. Right now, countries are planning to expand fossil fuel productions in 120% more than what is required to stabilize the climate at 1.5 Celsius. And for you who are seeing us out there, remember what was the year 2024. And think about in your local area, how was the climate that year? That was the first year that we reached as an average temperature in the planet 1.5 Celsius. I remember in my country, 400 municipalities out of 1,100 were without water. The largest city, Bogota, went into rationalizing water for 1 year. We had fires, we have drought, and it was actually really like, if that's going to be the new reality, I cannot imagine what is with 2.8. And that's actually the environmental limiting we are working towards. And so, to summarize, the struggle in this COP is between the fossil capital and the countries that want to continue to live on fossil fuels, and the other countries that actually say, we have to put humanity, environmental security first, and save the children that were already born in this century.
Susana Muhammad, you used to be the chief negotiator on climate at the COPs. You were the climate minister. So can you talk about the power of the oil lobby? I mean, we're talking about over 1,600, the largest group of lobbyists ever. Also, there are 900 indigenous representatives. That is the largest group of indigenous representation. So talk about the balance, and also are indigenous demands being considered here? I mean, indigenous leaders shut down this COP on Friday for hours.
It's exactly, I think that's the picture of the 21st century. You want to summarize this issue in one picture, is the picture of the woman from the Amazon, the indigenous woman, blocking the entrance of the COP, and on the other side of the fence, the military protecting the fortress of the COP. What fortress are you protecting? You are protecting the fossil fuel capitalists. That's why you're protecting. And actually, the influence in these rooms of the fossil fuel lobby is huge. That comes in two forms. Petrostates that have, even Colombia has its own oil state company, but also private companies that have the lobbyists. And it becomes a battle of actually the fossil fuel capital resisting change. This is what COP has become. This is what it's about now. Resisting the change from the fossil fuel capital and outside the fence of the COP, outside the military. not 900. 900 were the ones that got accredited. We have 4,000 indigenous peoples from all the Amazon that came during 25 days by boat through the Amazon River from all the communities, from the 8 countries of the Amazon. They have what they call the indigenous camp. They are there outside. These people, they do have the knowledge to save the planet. They do have the knowledge to save the Amazon. And we are not talking about that here. So that's why on Tuesday, actually, they came by